listen to We the People Radio. This afternoon, we've got a great lineup for you. You're going to totally love it. You can find all of our information at wethepeopleradio.us. And my name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm your co-host, Debbie Bocciglippi. It's so good to be
She's
here with you.
She's my partner in crime.
I know. We got some good stuff going on right now.
She's sitting in for Bill because we're doing a little pre-recording today, so it'll sound a little different than normal. But this is recorded in April of 2019, just in case we replay this at a future date and some of the, I don't know, politics or anything we might reference has changed.
It's Earth Month, Erin.
Yeah, I know. I love Earth Month.
Earth Day is April 22nd.
Lying. Yeah, please save up all your recyclables and then throw them away on Earth Day. That's what Earth Day is for. Or maybe that's just me. I've been doing that for so long now, it's not even fun anymore. It was fun when I taught my kids to do that, though. What a hater. So our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Now they're stuck with us.
Team Power. Well, wait, I love your global whining sticker on the back of your car.
I know. You have any idea how hard it was to stick that on the car? I've had it for years. Stop global whining.
I'm surprised your car is still white, like clean.
I like driving through the like liberal places, and they get up real close because they're like, oh, look at that sticker. And then they get close enough to read it, and they're like, ew. You can see it all turn dark. It's bad. I've got to find a new one, though, because if I ever get rid of the car, I'm going to need a new one. Team Power is your local Kubota and John Deere dealer. Yeah, it's much better when Bill does the commercial, obviously. And I'm just like, you know, the comic relief. I'm not really the good commercial announcer here. But they are a certified dealer for tractors, utility vehicles, turf equipment, and they also carry a full line of implements to help you tackle any job. Dealership offers, oh my gosh.
Keep going,
Dave. I should stop trying to talk fast because it's obviously not working for me.
I know. We want to save time for our guests.
Good Lord. Dealership offers well-staffed parts and service department, and they operate better than I speak at the moment. You can find them at 530-226-9226, and they're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake, right next door to Phil's Propeller.
I see where we can use these tractors in San Francisco. Let's just plow down their high-density...
Actually, if you took tractors down there, they would just use them to clean the poo off the sidewalks.
Without any
I was there. I was there like two weeks ago. And seriously, one of the guys that was at the meeting I attended said that he couldn't wait to get out of there because he had two people chase him with hypodermic needles down the street.
Oh, like, my goodness.
Oh,
this reminds me. Our first guest, has seen this firsthand.
Oh, nice. Well, then let's introduce him. So Craig Rucker is from CFACT. He is the president and co-founder. And he's been doing this for over 30 years. He's provided expertise to a wide range of government, academic, media, and industry forums. His organization, the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow, boasts a large grassroots membership base, features over 50 scientific and academic experts, and is widely heralded as a leader in the free market think tank community in Washington, D.C. What more is there? There should be a lot more thinking in Washington, D.C. Thank you for promoting that.
Well, thank you, Erin. Great to be on your program. And while I have been in San Francisco, and I, in fact, was with Debbie and had a chance to visit some of those, I don't know what you'd call them. They're like tent cities. I did not have anybody chase me with hypodermic needles. That's a
bonus.
Sounds like an adventure.
Yeah, this guy was from New York. I guess I should fill in that part. He's from New York. He goes, you know, I used to worry when I walked through Harlem. He goes, I can't wait to get back. It's going to feel so much safer.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, that's really not a ringing endorsement, actually.
No, not at all. Well, as you said, we are CFACT, and our organization actually works, and this is kind of seems like an oxymoron. We're conservative, or conservative/libertarian. But we work on environmental issues, and generally that seems like it's the purview of the far left to be on the environment. But we think in our philosophy that actually the environment is something that should have a home on our side, but not, not the deep green ecology, not the type that worships Mother Earth or promotes big government.
Or hates people.
But one that's common sense, common sense solutions, like collecting your recyclables and throwing them in the garbage can or things like that. But these are the types of things that we think are good, is actually just stewarding the planet, taking care of it, much like the Bible commands us to be good stewards of the planet, but not to worship it.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that going on. You guys have a wealth of information. Your website is cfact.org, so CFACT.org. And you guys have everything on there. There's information on literally every topic.
Well, we do try to try to cover as many as we can. We have been around for about 30 years. Thank you for reminding me of that. I just try to forget that. But, yes, we've been around for quite a long time. And we work on everything from global warming, which is probably the issue du jour, as well as a Green New Deal, which we're adamantly opposed to. We work with Debbie on a number of these issues, dealing with sustainable development, and we're critics of the green form of sustainable development and recycling and fracking, energy issues. So all these things you can find at our website at CFAC.org. There's part of that shameless promotion you said I was allowed to do.
All day.
And,
well, you know, there's so much bad information out there. And even posing as good, that really just muddies the water. It's not really worth the time people spend reading or listening to it. And so really good factual information allows people to push back on some of this stuff, because it's not popular, obviously, to say that, you know, that we should destroy the, you know, we should just destroy Western civilization in 12 years, otherwise we're all going to die. I mean, that kind of stuff needs a balance.
Oh, it struck me that way years ago when I started looking into environmental issues. I grew up in, actually, you mentioned New York. I wasn't, again, with the person that chased you or like that. I was on the other end of the state in Buffalo, in the rural areas of upstate New York, which I would say it's actually, and this surprises people when I say that, but a lot of upstate New York is actually fairly conservative. A lot of people, I heated my house by wood. I grew up in a family that was blue-collar and hunting. And when I went away to college, I spent some time in the service too, went away to college, I noticed that a lot of people from New York City, more of the urban areas, considered themselves environmentalists. And I found that peculiar because most of them, and this is not to disparage anybody from urban areas, but they really couldn't tell a raccoon from a skunk. And
yes, we've noticed that.
They were criticizing me as I was not environmental. And I found that odd. And I did not find myself in agreement with any of their positions on almost any issue. And this is actually something people don't know much about. But actually, if you look at the rural areas of America, the ones of people where they live closest to nature, tend to be those red districts where you see a lot of people supporting President Trump and more conservative values. And the urban areas, more detached from nature, tend to be the ones that claim to be green. But in fact, many of these green groups have constituencies, and in fact we did some surveys of them, that are mostly lawyers and people like that, that staff these groups, that really are not experts on these particular issues. They do have some scientists that they go to, and unfortunately a lot of the scientific organizations have been bought out by a lot of politicians and money. But for the most part, we think that there needs to be a voice out there, and that's what we try to provide, for a reasoned, common-sense approach to taking care of the environment, but in a way that's consistent with our Western values and free market traditions.
Well, we had a conversation with Dr. Willie Soon, and he aptly pointed out the thing that we always notice. Western civilization, developed societies, always have more trees, better ecology, cleaner water, cleaner, you know, streets, except for San Francisco. But that kind of thing, I mean, there's always better stewardship. And the third world countries tend to be decimated, poverty-stricken, and starving.
Exactly true. One of the projects that we do at CFAC, we call it the Adopt a Village Program, but we actually try to work in the developing countries. We have programs in Africa and in Latin America because we don't just want to be critics of the Green New Deal and what the other side is saying, but we want to actually show responsible stewardship and also helping people in the developing world where most of the problems are very serious. And unlike the United Nations, which tries to preach a message of dependency, very much like our welfare system, where they give very poor people, destitute people, lots of money to remain that way, these carbon offsets where they'll... I just noticed that the Yankees, New York Yankees, signed up to be just this week some part of the UN program to give carbon offsets for any electricity that they use that might be from fossil fuels. Well, what they're doing by achieving those offsets is they're telling the undeveloped countries to remain that way. That's the offset. You remain poor, don't use fossil fuel energy, And, you know, we'll feel better about it when we go to a Yankees game. And that's terrible. Our program tries to sponsor the types of entrepreneurship and people working to create wealth and prosperity in these countries using capitalism, the same thing that we all got wealthy, our forefathers used to get us to the place where we're living longer and healthier than at any time in human history. And that has great environmental benefits. All the leaders in clean air, clean water, even species preservation, these are Western countries that have capitalist economies. Socialist countries like Cortez touts all the time. She says she's a socialist. Abysmal records, even going back to the Soviet Union, which
and terrible, terrible human rights records and everything else. Craig, hang on for 1 second. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Craig Rucker. You've got Debbie and Aaron here on We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Bust out the windows, put his family on food stamps. Now he's a big spender, no food on the table, and the bills ain't paid, cause he's spending on cigarettes and PGA. They'll turn us all into beggars, cause they're easier to please. They're feeding our people that government cheese.
I love the government cheese song. Thanks for the lead-in, Craig. I appreciate it.
Wow, that is a great tune.
It is. Like, you can't beat the government cheese song.
I mean, or I guess you don't do DVDs anymore, but you got the... where I can get that album?
I'll have to send you that clip. I don't know. I found it online somewhere, and it just seems to fit. All the time, over and over and over. I try not to use it to death, but, you know, it's tempting. All right. So... not to take a giant swerve, but okay, when I went on your website, I was super excited that you guys do things on fracking, because I think most of us are complete dunces about fracking, and I'm absolutely sick and tired of hearing about how all the water catches on fire and all this stuff. So can you give us like a, you know, it doesn't have to be an entire course of fracking for dummies, but could you do a microscopic course of fracking for dummies?
I'm thinking of the Wonder Years here when that, what is that, scientist that used to say, this is frack.
This is frack.
No.
Yes, please, that one.
I won't
one.
Give you that type of a course. But it's been a process that's actually been in existence for decades, going back to the 50s, 60s is when it first started coming into fruition. And it's a process basically where they can drill down and using principally water but some other solvents, they're able to, with high pressure, crack the ground in a sense and release extra amounts of natural gas and sometimes oil as well, but mostly natural gas into the, and make the wells much more productive. What's really been a boon to this is that they're able to do it horizontally. Whereas conventional wells drill straight down, these fracking wells go down, usually around 3,000 feet and then they jet out and can go out as far as 2 miles. And just the amount of natural gas that you can get from these just is so much larger than what you would get with conventional wells that were mostly in use up through the 90s. It's led to a revolution here in the United States where they're able to, actually increase both our oil and our gas. And to the point, America is now one of the, if it's not the largest producer of fossil fuels in the world. And it has led to keeping our gas prices going, from going skyward, been creating a lot of jobs, and has also not been without controversy, as a lot of people are concerned about it, perhaps contaminating well water and the like. But the EPA has looked into certain areas where they thought this might be a problem. One of them was Dimock, Pennsylvania. And they've found nothing. This is the Obama EPA, which is fairly hypochondriac about this, but they found nothing there and in Wyoming and other places. So it is a safe process. This level of 3,000 feet down is well below most, pretty much everywhere, where you would get well water. And there is, to date, to my knowledge, there's been absolutely no contamination that's been verified and been something the subject of which they would stop it. There have been states that are not moving forward on it, perhaps most notable New York, which is sitting on the Marcellus Shale. And to this point, Cuomo and the legislature in Albany is stopping it from going forward, and this is unfortunate, especially to upstate New York residents who are suffering under high taxes and the like, and the farms are dying off in that particular region. But other areas like Ohio, Pennsylvania, we're seeing literally a revolution, and this has been a great boon, and we for one, very much support it.
Is the United Nations for fracking, and just as a precursor to that?
That just seems like a hard no.
Craig is Craig Rucker, our guest today, has probably, and all the people I know, been to more United Nations meetings than anyone to get firsthand knowledge of what the UN think the Green New Deal type thing are up
I'm
to.
I'm glad you clarified that. When I say I go to the United Nations, it may sound like I actually go there
for fun,
supporting what they're doing. No,
well, he does go for fun, too. You'll have to share some stories, some of your wild stories about your antics, you know, to mock what these people are doing. But, Craig, it has the United Nations taken a stand about fracking?
I have not. No, I don't believe they have. And in fact, they do their best to try and ignore it. I remember there's been several occasions when we brought this up that they have, you know, they put the United States, United Nations says the United States is one of the big offenders of greenhouse gases, but we've been the nation that has lowered them the most, and it's been because of fracking. But they do not cite that. They always like to cite wind power and autos and things, you know, new electric vehicles. And
my cows.
Yeah, maybe we're reining in our cows. That's right.
They just hate cows.
But it's actually fracking that has allowed us to lower our greenhouse emissions. Not that I think that's necessarily a good thing, because, you know, carbon dioxide is plant food, so maybe that's something we should be ashamed of. But for those who are staying up late at night worrying about climate catastrophe, the United States should be the beacon to which every country in the world should long to be like, and it's because of fracking. But you'll never hear that from those at the United Nations, who tend to be very anti-fossil fuel, very pro-renewable energy and sustainable development and the like.
It's just a mass of contradiction. Every single time you listen to these guys, and they tell you one thing, but, well, for one, they're not doing any of it themselves. You know, all the no flying on planes and all
the hypocrisy of
all that. I mean, they're all doing those things. We're just not allowed to do those things. If you were gonna kind of rank the things that are the most, you know, if you were king for the day, and you could just rip open everybody's head and dump in information, like, what would be the first thing you'd go to?
Climate change. I think that that's, and I know that Mark is going to be your next guest in that, but I think that they realize that they pinned pretty much most of their hope on that particular issue, and it's a fraud. I just don't know what else to say about it. Does the Earth change, you know, temperatures? Of course it has. But to me, one of the greatest things that debunks this whole nonsense that we're causing a climate catastrophe is the fact that it's one something that Patrick Moore, co-founder of Greenpeace, once said. The fact that in ice ages, levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere were exponentially higher, 3, 4, 5 times higher than they are today, yet we had an ice age, shows almost categorically that there is not this relationship, one-to-one relationship of carbon dioxide to temperature change. And the Greens and the left is using this issue to promote all sorts of things, you know, lowering beef, trying to get with our diets. They're trying to tell us how we should heat our homes, what our thermostats should be, what type of cars we should drive, or we should be taking public transportation. They're using this as a sledgehammer to literally alter American lifestyles, attack our capitalist system. It's an outrage, and they shut down debate. They basically say everybody's in agreement, and there's a consensus, and it's a garbage consensus because there's no formal poll on this thing that's any has any credibility.
Right. It makes it sound like all the scientists in the world are at slumber camp together, and you know, summer camp, and they're having a slumber party, and they took a little poll, you know,
slumber camp,
yes. Summer camp, or they're having a sleepover, and then they looked around the room and said, "Okay, is everybody on the same page? Yeah, okay,
agree.
We are.
Yeah. Hey, Craig,
I don't know what the deal is with those on the left. They always want to have a consensus. I mean, I don't
I love that
you
word.
Go into socialist countries, whether it's Cuba or Russia. Why or former Soviet Union? Why do they have elections? They do have elections. But why? There's no opponents.
Yeah.
Somehow they like this idea that everybody's on the same page. I mean, the only place I ever see where there's a 97-3 or even less consensus, when you have that big of a consensus, is in a socialist country like Cuba or Venezuela or North Korea.
And they have a gun
there
to somebody's head.
Consensus is like that.
Craig, when... So there are some... there is some data that says that we have warmed, and not by much. So for people who say we are causing global warming, the Earth is warming, what can we say back that says irrefutably, Craig, that's like, no, it's not. And even if it is warming, you cannot tie it to my breath or the emissions out of my car. Like what kind
of... virtually zero anymore.
Yeah, right.
By the way.
So, just for the average person, like, to really, you know, for somebody who's listening and going, why do we even care about the United Nations? Like, why are we having this topic? It's not going to affect us here in America. What say you?
Well, it is going to affect us. I just gave some examples there. I think that you have state legislators, you know, impacting everything from the food you eat, or this whole effort with meatless Mondays on in New York City for school kids.
Yeah.
What the kids are taught in school, what the type of cars you can drive. This climate change issue impacts literally almost every aspect of your life. As far as what to tell them, I always say that the temperature is changing. Of course, we had ice ages in the past. We have, you know, temperature changes all the time. Nobody advocates that the climate is some sort of steady temperature where every morning you get up and it's got a little bit of dew on the ground and then it reaches 72 and it's sunny and the wind is always at this speed. Nobody's advocating. Of course, the temperature climate changes. But the question is, what's causing that? Is it man? And if that is their position, then how do they explain past warming areas that were much warmer than today, when the Vikings were around, when the Romans were around? And did they have chariots that didn't, their emissions weren't checked? I mean, I'm not sure how.
It was
how
those little
they...
sandals that they wore.
It was there's all something there. And you look at these, a lot of times when you see these reports, it requires a little bit of inquiry. You know, there was recently some melting in the Swiss Alps, and that was reported dutifully by the media as evidence of climate change.
That's
what
right.
They didn't report was that underneath those glaciers that were melting, they found Roman roads and Roman mines.
Sandals were doing it.
Under a glacier. Same with the Viking villages they found under the permafrost in Alaska. In Greenland. And in Alaska, they found forests under this that dated back 1,000 years ago.
Huh.
This type of stuff is never...
That is just super, super inconvenient. That just blows the whole deal. We've got to take another really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Craig Rucker. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You need to get a little more honesty out there.
Pretty face to tell me pretty lies.
Here we go, guys. No whining this time. And one, two. Man, it's hot in here. Seriously, dude.
on the planet. It's heated up almost a whole degree. It hasn't been this hot in a long time, not since the 16th century, when there were no evil SUVs. Stop global warming. It's up to you. The Earth's been heating up and cooling back down since the day it started spinning round and round. Stop global warming. Get your head out of the clouds,
please. It's a really good point, though. I mean, we had an ice age once, and obviously we weren't driving cars then. So how do they figure the ice age wasn't? Why aren't we all living on the ice now?
You're completely right, Aaron, and I'll even go further than that.
It's my fourth grade science.
Whenever they talk about this whole thing, it's their starting point. They choose a year, 1880 is the typical one, whenever you talk to climate, because that's when they say the temperature records were best. It's still a kind of a random year. That was a particularly cold year. It was the end of an epoch called the Little Ice Age. When you start your base at the end of something called the Little Ice Age, and
ding,
we're
ding,
coming
ding.
Back
yeah, hello.
It's going to get warmer.
Yeah, how did it get warmer? You need a longer, you know, temperature record. And we have it through proxy data and in many other ways. We know that the time of the Vikings was as hot or hotter. And this is even admitted to, not by CFACT or some of these other conservative groups like Heartland and CEI. This is actually the UN admitted that the many cases it was much warmer back 1,000 years ago. So insofar as the temperature has not climbed out of control from something that we've seen, or it's not an anomaly from what we've seen 1,000 and even 2,000 years ago in the Roman era, why is there reason for panic? I'll tell you, it has nothing to do with the temperature. This is just a control device because everything runs on energy. And the UN, by going after energy, is literally attacking fundamentally our entire economic system.
Yeah, and Cristiana Figueres, who used to be with the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, even said so. She said that, you know, we were going to do away with the current system, the current economic system. In other words, the economic system, wow, I'm just as bad as you, Aaron, of capitalism. And, I mean, they're admitting it now, Craig. And, you know, something that I love about CFACT and what your organization is up to, like no other organization out there, none are doing what you guys are up to, which is battling this head on, battling this, the non-science, the propaganda. And not only do you do movies, you promote books, you've got people on your staff who are writing books, but you actually go to these United Nations meetings, and that's where I met you at the Rio Earth Summit for the first time. And when you go to these United Nations meetings, you are reporting what is going on, because Americans are being kind of left out of the conversation, except for at the end of these conferences to say, oh, we came to an agreement and, oh, we're going to save planet Earth in, you know, 20 years or now, you know, 11 years. And so, but you have fun. So not only are you going there to report and get back data to Americans. So I just hope that everybody joins CFACT, supports your organization, and donates to your organization, because without donations, you guys cannot do what you're doing, which no one else is doing. But
and it's not like the other guys are doing this all for free.
Oh, I mean, that's right. Well, thank you for that. Very kind
they're
words.
Extremely.
Your check will be in the mail after this. Thank you very much. No, actually, we do enjoy ourselves here, and I will say, Debbie's part of the troublemaking that we often do at these.
That's why Debbie and I are friends.
We dressed up as one of Santa's helpers recently in Poland.
And
we delivered lumps of coal to Greenpeace. Polish coal, just to make a point, because they've been very naughty this year. We had Mark Morano, your next guest, dress up in a Santa uniform and went right into their office. And to their credit, Greenpeace were good sports on this particular one. This took place in December. Other cases are not such good sports, such as in Morocco. We were able to put up, this came right after the Trump election. We put up a full-size picture of Donald Trump and shredded the Paris Treaty at their conference, and for that we got thrown out into the Moroccan desert. and barred. Actually, I was accepted back in. This marks one of three times I've been kicked out of these meetings. But they let me back in so long as I made an oath to the United Nations that I would abide by their rules, I guess, and went through some sort of sensitivity training.
You have to wear a little blue helmet when you do it?
Sensitivity
Something
training.
Something like that. But
Did you feel good after that sensitivity training?
Well, I did have my fingers behind my back. I still...
Classic. After seeing the little video of you guys delivering coal, I would expect nothing less.
We've dropped banners off Greenpeace ships.
Yeah, they snuck onto a Greenpeace ship.
And redubbed it the Ship of Lies. That was in the New York Times. We were able to get Lord Christopher Monckton, another noted skeptic, to jump out of an airplane in Durban to call attention to Climate Gate scandal. That was when somebody hacked into the East Anglia, these are the climate units, and found all the dirty tricks that they were doing to hide the decline and all the different things that they were doing to try and push a climate narrative forward that hyped alarmist messages. That was exposed back in 2009. To call attention to that, Lord Monckton jumped out of a plane, made the front page of a South African paper, with a big banner behind him calling for Climate Gate 2. But these are the types of tactics that do actually work for our side. Not many are willing to engage in them, because I guess not many are silly enough to jump out of airplanes at 10,000 feet, but we do at CFACT because that's how committed we are.
Well, and also for it's such a serious doom and gloom future that the United Nations and Al Gore and Leonardo DiCaprio and so many others are pushing upon us. So, you know, for a lot of people out there, Craig and Aaron, I would say that, you know, the seriousness of it drives many people away. But if you can be funny and have fun about it and make fun of, you know, these just horrible plans, that people become engaged. I think that's a talent that you guys have, Craig. And it does take some...
We were destined to be friends. Mocking is absolutely the only way to go with these guys, because they have no sense of humor.
Well, you're going to enjoy Mark Morano. He's the godfather of climate denial. He is I'm his boss, technically, if you call me a boss. We met smoking cigars at these UN conferences and just had a roaring laughter at some of the stupidity that they did, and I felt I had to hire this guy. But he runs the biggest climate skeptic website in the world. It's called ClimateDepot.com, and Rush Limbaugh calls it his favorite source of climate information other than himself. And I would recommend if you have any questions regarding any matter on climate change, whether it's polar bears or ice
melt.
Melt or sea level rise, just go to ClimateDepot.com, plug that in the search engine, and you will find all the facts and information you need on any of these issues.
Yeah, I've been looking in his book, The Climate Change, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, and Debbie pointed out the wanted posters. That's pretty good. Did they make wanted posters of you, or are you still working up to that?
No, I've had them in the past. Not in that one. That was our Paris. Among the other things we do, and I do recommend people can get the copy of this, we put out a movie called Climate Hustle. It was actually number one in America for one night. Jimmy Kimmel attacked it for 7 minutes on The Tonight Show. And we use humor in that in this particular film. You can get it at CFACT.org at our bookstore. And we try to showcase some of the flaws in the science. We have a second movie coming out, probably will be due out next spring, called Climate Hustle 2. And this will look into the motivations of what's driving those to push this agenda, as well as some of the hypocrisy that you've pointed out already of people like Cortez, for example, who spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in private flights and that, yet telling us we need to take trains to go across the country as part of her new Green New Deal.
Oh, do we get trains?
Well, she said we could.
I thought we were back to the Roman sandals.
Wait, are you guys talking about Alexandria O'Communist?
AOC.
Or whatever she is, optional cortex or something. apparently are a lot of things that AOC works as an acronym to.
Well, Craig, you know, I'm glad you brought her up again because, you know, who was it? The Congress or Senate voted whatever, some huge number against the Green New Deal. And so many people out there, just like hearing that Trump has taken us out of the Paris Agreement, are thinking, yay, we're freed. Are we free?
Oh, not so much.
Well, not at all. In fact, the the left has become pretty clever in how they craft certain laws and the way they do things nowadays. Now, as far as the Green New Deal goes, yes, that's we're free of that for the moment, unless the, both chambers and the president are taken over by a party, the Democratic Party, who would probably champion that. But even there, I have question marks. But the things like the Paris Accord, the UN has gotten creative. It takes two administrations to actually pull you out of this. So Obama signs us on board, and you have to, a four-year process of being considered and then being granted a waiver for that from that by the UN. And that's cleverly and craftily done by those on the left, so that if you do get a Donald Trump in there, you at least get another shot at unseating him and getting another president back in who can, all he has to do is get rid of Trump's executive order, and we're right back in the Paris Accord. We saw this also just last Friday, where we, I guess the president had issued an executive order to open up drilling in the Arctic Ocean, including ANWR, and also off the Atlantic coast. And apparently a judge, they found a judge who would rule with them that Trump can't do that, that the way it was put in was by an Obama executive order, but Trump can't, as a new president, get rid of Obama's executive orders. It takes Congress to do so, according to this judge.
Okay, but that's not even real.
Well, it prevailed. You get, I guess you can shop for judges nowadays to get, give you just about anything.
There's a lot of that going on. We have to take another really quick break, and actually this kind of fits with the judge idea. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Perfect.
If we had some global warming, if we had some global warming, it wouldn't be 20 below, it wouldn't be 20 below. If we had some global warming, if we had some global warming, I wouldn't be shoveling snow, I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow. If we had some global warming, if we had some...
That's part of a whole video, a couple of guys from Minnesota.
Pretty funny.
Debbie and I sat around the kitchen table last night and made ourselves crazy. Some people might dispute that and say we potentially were that way before, but there's a lot of stuff online. When you start looking up global warming songs and
karaoke,
stuff like that.
And we saw one video, Craig.
It was just ghastly.
We have Craig Rucker as our guest today. Craig Rucker is with CFAQ.
Good call.
CFAQ.
We should tell people that. We already know that.
Yeah.
I was enjoying that song. That was, again, another good one. I was thinking, even after we talked about the judges in the last segment, I was thinking Hotel California, you know, these judges.
Oh, yes.
Anytime you want, but you can never leave.
Ooh,
I don't know.
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's
of course, the ultimate song I think they want to lead us to is, just my assessment, is John Lennon's Imagine, maybe?
Oh, the ultimate throw-up song.
Imagine all the people.
You know, though, we might have to shave 60 seconds off the end of the show so we can play him When Glaciers Weep.
Oh, yes, we found it.
Have you heard that one? When Glaciers Weep?
I'm looking forward to it.
This guy has the worst. I mean, he shouldn't sing the ABCs. Oh, Ashley's in there cringing. She's like, oh, man, we got to do that one again.
Or she's like, please don't, please
it's
don't.
It's ghastly.
But, you know, here's the point of all that that I think is
spoiler alert
significant. As it, you know, even if you look up global warming for songs, Craig, the indoctrination to the young people is extraordinary.
All kids singing them.
The kids singing, the videos that they've made for these kids. One video had, like, what, 34 million views? About global warming.
Is that the one they were all dressed up in plastic?
I can't remember.
Some idiotic woman who shouldn't have been in the front row.
Not the synchronized swimming one, was that?
I don't know.
But, you know, Craig,
obviously we were up a lot.
The propaganda is just rich and thick out there.
My gosh, yes. Just even in the recent news, we had Mayor de Blasio issuing Meatless Mondays. And we have a young student out in, a young girl in Sweden who... leading strikes around the world.
Greta.
Kids, yes. She's able to organize these things. And I always wondered if you had a pro-gun you know, people walked out to protect their Second Amendments or pro-life demonstration, would students be allowed to go out and leave their classes in droves?
That would be no all day.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And it reminds me, Craig, you know, at the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change Poland conference that we were both at the Trump administration's panel discussion on the mixed use of multiple energy sources, which you were in the front of the room, I was in the back of the room, Greta Thunberg, this 15-year-old, with her big old plastic bag, by the way, with a bunch of stuff and her smartphone, and, you know, was sitting right in front of me. And, you know, it's just extraordinary, the hypocrisy. But could you share with us what happened at that panel discussion that at this most recent conference that you and I witnessed? To me, I'm like shocked over just the rudeness, the fact that the kids got to do this. But I'll let you explain a little bit further.
You know, it was kind of an outrage, and it's a great example of a double standard that the UN has for pro-freedom groups versus those that share the UN line. The U.S. has a presentation of sort that they're able to give every single time. It's like the U.S. Presentation that they give for COP attendees or people who are at the climate summit. And, of course, when Trump became president, these things became fairly contentious. No big deal as long as Obama was president. But when Trump came in 2 years ago, they basically prevented it from taking place by the disruptions, people getting up and yelling. And, you know, people complained about that. But this year, it went to a new level. Right during the presentation, people actually got permission from the United Nations, actually formal permission, to shout down the speakers, go up, wave banners, disrupt the entire proceeding for, I don't know, what was it, 10, 15 minutes?
At least 15.
Yeah, while they were giving their presentation to the people talking about how fracking, coal, you know, new energy revolution going on in America is the way we should go, and touting the merits of clean coal. And, we got pointed out specifically. I know that Mark Morano and I did. They actually pointed their fingers at us, said we were part of the problem.
They recognized you.
Yeah, they
knew.
Right,
just the coal
guys? The interesting thing is that when we did a similar thing, which I mentioned before, with just putting up a picture of Donald Trump and shredding the Paris Agreement, we were thrown in the desert, kicked out, had to go through sensitivity training and the like. These folks were actually given permission to disrupt the meeting, and it's worse than that, because while they were pointing their finger at us, Mark is ready to jump up and challenge them. I told them, no, we can't. We don't have a permit to do so. You can't challenge these guys without risk of being thrown out again.
Yeah, so and it's important that we remain with being one of the few groups of people, your CFACT, for example, that gets into these conferences. We still need a foot in the door. We cannot do so. When we go to these conferences, we kind of have to watch our step, because at that same, you know, there were several hundred people in that room, and there were several hundred young people who filled the room to disrupt the United States presentation on what they're doing with energy. And
so nobody's going to get any facts out in this thing.
No.
The good news is they can't black bag you, because they don't probably have any SUVs. It's hard to kidnap somebody in a
SUVs.
Prius.
But, you know, I went up to ask the United Nations police, who were in front of the stage, and asked them, why aren't you stopping this? And I got it all on video, and I said, why aren't you stopping this? And then I got up on stage to ask the panelists, why are you letting them do this? Well, the UN
they let you
police
crawl up on the stage?
No, the UN police grabbed me, took a picture of my name badge, and we're going to turn me in or something.
Ruh-roh.
So here these kids can do whatever they want, disrupt a panel discussion. If we did that, like Craig says, we'd be out of there.
Yeah.
We'd be gone. We'd
but
never
see, it's
be.
It's no different, and the same thing is happening here. Obviously, we see the Antifa guys. They can destroy a city, but if, you know, two guys that say, hey, we think we should close the border. Oh, terrorists.
Yeah.
You know.
So,
well,
Craig.
That's the brave new world of the Greens. We're going to be actually showcasing in our next movie a lot about what is being taught in the public schools. It's actually in the core requirements that most teachers have to actually teach is much of this alarmist stuff. And it's not just restricted to climate change. It's on everything from plastics to you name it just about. These are the types of standards that the teachers, and you know, a lot of people point at the teachers, and to some degree, teachers are more liberal than not. But part of the problem is that this is just core curriculum that
this
they
is
have
the curriculum,
to, by law,
sure.
teach.
Yeah, and you know, you have one of my favorites, I think, who is going to be on your film, Holly Swanson, and Aaron knows Holly Swanson from...
Holly's great.
She's and amazing.
Super smart about Common Core. So the film that you're talking about is Climate Hustle 2?
Two. Duh. Yes.
Duh.
Yeah.
So, it will be coming out in the spring of next year, and we're excited about it, and hopefully we can shake things up again, and... we'll be maybe back. Maybe we can get back on your program. See, there's shameless shelf promotion.
No, see, that's good. Because, you know, the thing is, it's. I think it's important for people to be able to hear folks like you. And, you know, if for nothing else, if they're never going to go educate anybody, at least they don't have to feel like there's nobody out there doing it. You know, because
well,
that becomes part of the unmotivation on the conservative side is people think, oh, well, there's no point. Nobody's fighting this.
Well, CFACT has so many tools for us to use to combat, you know, the 97% or the seas are rising or, you know, just get educated like you're saying. But they've got the tools. So if you guys out there listening want to go to a great resource, it's CFACT.org. It is, and I just love being a part of your group, Craig. And well, I'm not really, but I just promote Craig. And
yeah, because they took away your name
badge. You know what? Because I want to go to these conferences, but I don't have the bravery to go on my own. And I want to have fun. So, you know, I connected with these guys, and it just makes a real
big
difference.
That's kind of a no-brainer at this point.
I think she's under. So I've seen her very brave, and she's more fearless than she's letting on here.
I might need to go. I'll hold Debbie up. I'm
oh my
like
gosh,
twice
we have
her
a
size.
Blast! Craig, talk Aaron into going.
We've got like 15 seconds left, and I don't want to cheat you out of the Glaciers Melt song because you're going to love it. I hear you're a musician. Thanks for coming on with us. We're definitely doing this again. You will be our hostage in the future.
Thank you. Pleasure being on.
Craig Rucker.
I look at you now, see a temperature rising, while mighty glaciers weep. I look at you now, see your oceans arising, while nations are lost in the deep. I don't know why nobody told you they stole and fooled you.
Good afternoon and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm your co-host, Debbie Bacigalupi.
Bill is on, we're going to have Bill on assignment. That's a story. Bill's on assignment today.
I guess you'll have to listen in next week to find out where he went.
Just find out where Bill went. Which means I'm doing the sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is your local Kubota and John Deere dealer serving Shasta, Siskiyou, Tehama, and Trinity counties. They're a certified dealer for tractors, utility vehicles, turf equipment, and they also carry a full line of implements to help you tackle any job. Dealership offers well-staffed parts and service departments, and you can find Bill there. See, Bill does never say that in the commercial, but you can find Bill there. You can reach them at 530-226-9226, and they are located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, just south of Phil's Propeller.
You know you're in rural America when they're selling tractors.
Exactly. Tractors, boats,
we're right SUVs.
We're right by a lake that's 25 miles long and a mountain that's 14,000 feet high. So, you know, might as well get out and do some stuff.
Like all the equipment that Alexandria O'Communist would love to get rid of.
Pretty much. We've got it all. So go get it serviced at Team Power. Your mower blades need sharpening. I know that already. And for heaven's sakes, cut the tall grass so we can stop having all these fires. And that's mostly all. So our guest today...
I'm so excited.
That's why Debbie's here. Our guest today is Mark Morano. He is the CFACT Director of Communications, but He founded ClimateDepot.com. He's the man at ClimateDepot.com.
And you've got to go there. You've got to go to that website.
Book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. And the daily cost or coast or whatever they are, the daily KOS. That's a pretty good review, Mark. Actually, it says evil personified.
Yeah. I call it
obviously you must be our new best friend.
I call it the golden book of golden nuggets, and it is, and it's available on Audible too. You have to get this book. I listened to it, even coming down from the ranch yesterday, I was listening to his book.
Why? She was ready to talk to you yesterday.
I'm always ready to talk to this guy.
So, bottom line is we've linked that on the website at wethepeopleradio.us, and we've got his website on there, climatedepot.com. And so now it's all you, Mark.
Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Debbie. Debbie, good to talk to you again. Thank you for the promotion.
Love you. Easy for me to say. Last night in your Santa suit, giving coal to the UN.
Yes, that's right. Debbie
or Greenpeace.
That was at the Poland UN Climate Summit, and Greenpeace was trying to ban all coal, which obviously didn't go over too well in Poland, because the Polish host had a whole tribute to Paul at the entrance of the UN Climate Conference there. So that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, needless to say, Greenpeace wasn't receptive to Santa Claus giving them lumps of coal. Some people got upset. Some of them were gracious about it, but we had a lot of fun with that stunt.
Well, you know, and I just found it so hypocritical that here you walk into the building where they were, across from where the United Nations meeting was, and, I mean, there's a full-on, full-wall bar with alcohol from the top of the ceiling all the way down, and they've got these...
I'm sure they made it with solar.
These plushy cushions, you know, those bean bags that people are sitting on, and they've got this stage and like all
probably
this
filled with hemp.
Amazing. All the electricity, the energy that they needed, the resources that they needed from planet Earth to put off their event. But
nobody else.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Mark. I just had to throw that in.
Yeah, no, she's right. And Debbie knows this. So she's a veteran as well as I am of all these UN climate summits. And they've actually done analysis, you know, when they have, they're usually, a lot of the times they're temporary structures, they have diesel generators out there, they're like little mini cities themselves, and when you add in all the private jets and all the Hollywood celebrities and the dignitaries and the foreign leaders that fly into these, they use more energy than like dozens of African nations do in a year just for the two-week conference that they have here. And the one I went to in Johannesburg, South Africa years ago, I think it was the UK Daily Mail, actually did a big expose about all the chefs that they had flown in, and they were preparing champagne, caviar for the world leaders as they sat around and talked about, you know, global poverty and how they were going to solve it with renewable energy and, you know, UN central planning somehow. So these conferences are a sham, and they're one of the reasons climate scientists love the global warming establishment. I mean, when you're a scientist, these are what you get to go to. You know, you get to fly around, and it's not just the ones Debbie and I have been to, not just these big UN climate summits. They have multiple summits throughout the year in all kinds of locations, from Cancun, South America, Africa. They have several lead-up meetings to that where they do reports and other meetings and emission targets and all kinds of things. So this is just a massive United Nations gravy train. And sadly, and I'll end on a down note here, President Trump's administration hasn't done anything really about that. They have pulled us out or announced the intent to pull out, but they still sent a delegation. And we went to their meeting at this last UN climate conference in Poland. And the U.S. was very tepid. They were extolling the virtues of fossil fuels, but they totally sidestepped any criticism or any skeptical stance on science. But unfortunately, Donald Trump's administration still rubber-stamping the U.N., still funding it. The budget that Donald Trump had the first year was fantastic, massive cuts to EPA, but everything was dead on arrival with the GOP Congress. But unfortunately, that still goes on. And so to expand on that just 1 minute here, the global warming movement right now, we are at a serious, serious crossroads. We haven't been this at a crossroads since Al Gore's film first came out in 2007. Right now, President Trump's administration is facing multiple legal challenges. on the global warming front. Kids lawsuits, James Hansen, all other kinds of lawsuits against oil companies. The problem is, because of George W. Bush administration, and because thus far President Trump hasn't reversed anything yet, through the executive order or challenged it in the courts, what stands as the accepted science is the United Nations ridiculous climate reports that won the Nobel Peace Prize with Al Gore in 2007, the UN IPCC reports, and the National Climate Assessment, which the Trump administration, the abomination the Trump administration allowed to go through. This was a big federal report. The media went nuts. Trump's own scientists disagree with him on global warming more dire. The report was a joke. It was written, coordinated by Andrew Light, Obama's chief UN Paris negotiator, a holdover. It was written, the scientists were Donald Wobbles and Catherine Hayhoe, two activists from the Union of Concerned Scientists. The report read like an environmental press release because it was written by environmental activists and Obama holdovers, but the Trump administration did nothing. So here's the problem. Scientifically, the United States government fully and only recognized. National Climate Assessment has been accepted, and the UN reports have been accepted. So these federal judges, I can't blame them. When they get these reports, if they're going by federal statutes, they're looking at, the UN reports, National Climate Assessment. They have to start thinking global warming is a threat because there's been no pushback. And sadly, the EPA doesn't look like it's going to do anything. Our greatest hope, I'll end on hope here, then I'll let you guys ask questions, but our greatest hope right now in the climate movement is the Presidential Climate Commission, that potentially will be headed by Dr. Will Happer, Princeton physicist, who said Earth is in a CO2 famine right now and has compared the demonization of carbon dioxide to the way Germany treated a certain ethnic group. I'll try not to go too far into Godwin's law here, where people get, you don't want to make Nazi analogies. But this is the most significant thing that could happen in the climate debate. We are on the cusp of it. We just have to make sure it actually goes through and that no one talks President Trump out of it. So we need this presidential commission that will re-examine the science of the United Nations, push back the National Climate Assessment, and that will set the stage for a review of the CO2 endangerment finding, the horrible judgment back in 2007 that the Supreme Court ruled carbon dioxide was a pollutant and could thus be regulated under the Clean Air Act. This presidential commission, all our hopes hinge on this, because otherwise, the fantastic nature of everything President Trump has done, pulling us out of Paris, reversing Obama's EPA regs, bunch of great energy stuff, making the United States the greatest energy provider in the world, could all be undone if the Democrats win in 2020, because we need to get on record, federal commission, that the science is wrong, to give our legislative regulatory bodies a real clear path. And that's what this commission could potentially represent, and we have to make this happen. So all eyes are on this presidential commission. That's the only thing that matters in the climate debate at the moment in terms of having the most massive impact. So I'm off my soapbox.
We like the soapbox.
We loved it.
That's why we do this show. We find people who have a good soapbox, and then we just like let them come on because we're just listening. Let's take a really quick break here so we don't have to cut off the next soapbox rant. You have like a couple of minutes to think that over, what that will be. Oh, you are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And then some.
Yeah. You know what? We need more Mark Moranos for sure. And, Mark, I have a question for you. We're with Mark Morano on We the People Radio. Yeah. I'm Debbie Bocciacalupi. I'm just taking over your show here, Aaron.
Go ahead and do it. Bill just sits over there and doesn't say anything.
And our guest is Mark Morano. He wrote a fabulous book. I've listened to it several times now on Audible. It's called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. You could go to CFAC.org and order the book from there. And, of course, it's available on Amazon. And really, you know what? These people who want global warming and want to control our lives don't want you to read this book because it's the golden book of golden nuggets. And it has so many, like, great things to combat, like the 97% and of scientists say and the seas are rising.
Yeah, the whole back. That's like little piggy snouts, which is classic. The world is spending nearly $1 billion a day to prevent global warming. Brilliant. I'm sure that money couldn't be used better somewhere else. A UN scientist has said that 90% consensus on global warming was pulled from thin air.
I mean, I'm not kidding. You go through this book, and it talks about the grant money. It talks about Al Gore. I mean, it's a thick book, but, you know, it's an easy read, and it's scientifically based on, you know, it's got some great. But anyway, Mark, I want to know, you were just talking about that our only hope, and I get it because I see what's going on out there and just the propaganda. Our only hope is this commission that is headed by Dr. Will Happer, who is, I believe he went to Yale. He's a Yale professor. But how do people get involved, Mark, to make a difference? Like, how does the average listener, is there anything we could do to help promote this commission?
Yeah, well, one of the things we do, one of the things that have been going on, there's been the whole series of scientists, public policy leaders urging the White House. We've signed a public letter urging them to go forward with this. Dr. Patrick Moore, this is interesting. Now, you say he's coming on, or you've already had him on? He's coming on in a couple of days, or when?
Patrick Moore, he will be coming on.
Co-founder.
Yeah, he'll be on next week.
Okay, the co-founder of Greenpeace has gone on Fox News, touted the whole concept of the climate science being fake news, and also said he was in town to meet with Dr. Happer of this climate commission. This caused all hell to break loose. To give you an idea how important this commission is, immediately, first of all, President Trump tweeted about Patrick Moore on Fox and Friends that day, within the hour, over the half hour of him being on. This caused massive media heartache. It caused climate people like Michael Mann to have heart attacks. People were going bonkers. The president is endorsing a climate denier, etc. So a couple things went into play immediately. First of all, Michael Mann went to Newsweek and did a did a rebuttal to Patrick Moore's claim that global warming is fake science.
As an aside, real quick, Michael Mann is not our friend, guys. So
yes, sorry about that. Michael Mann is a UN scientist and the inventor of this fraudulent hockey stick temperature graph, which said temperatures were flat until the 20th century when mankind took over control of the climate, essentially. But he went, the climate activists, the inner circle of the UN scientists, they went nuts. So he did a big op-ed at Newsweek, which I then did a point-by-point rebuttal to Michael Mann, and I used all the peer-reviewed sources, data, graphs, and even more. And Michael Mann tried to dismiss my thing, but he had some fun with it, saying that, oh, we must have really struck a nerve with the deniers. But anyway, the key thing that happened was before Patrick Moore went on Fox and Friends and before President Trump tweeted that climate was fake news, quoting Patrick Moore, climate change is fake news, he was one of the founders of Greenpeace. In fact, you guys said that earlier, founders and co-founder of Greenpeace, according to Google and Greenpeace itself. But what happened was within a day or two of him appearing on Fox News, Patrick Moore, the co-founder of Greenpeace, he was digitally erased in what Patrick Moore called tech tyranny. And I did a whole exclusive report likening it back to how Joseph Stalin, in his days as the grand Soviet leader, would wipe away commissars who were no longer in favor of the party. So I have photos of Stalin with his old comrades, and then they'd fall out of favor with the party, do something that he considered disgraceful or dissent, and they'd be airbrushed out of photos. Google did the exact same thing, and I have the screen captures. Patrick Moore, before Donald Trump retweeted him, and Patrick Moore after. He was a Greenpeace co-founder, according to Google. 2 days later, he was nowhere to be found. He was taken off Greenpeace. Now, the only problem with this, and there's no accountability for Google, they won't even listen to us, but the only problem with that is Greenpeace's own websites, according to the Wayback Machine, as recent as 2005, 2007, listed Patrick Moore as one of the co-founders of Greenpeace, including his photo, bio, and here's a little interesting tidbit. Among all the co-founders of Greenpeace, all the founding members, Patrick Moore was the only PhD scientist among them. So Greenpeace had all this, and I have the screen capture shots. So this story went huge. And actually, Fox News followed up on this. I did a whole segment with them on this story. But this gives you an idea of the threat. Patrick Moore comes to Washington, D.C. to meet with Will Happer about this presidential commission as part of the group that, Will Happer formed, the CO2 Coalition. You could ask Patrick Moore all about this. It's an incredible story. He came as a co-founder of Greenpeace within 24 hours after the taping and President Trump touting Patrick Moore. He's no longer a co-founder of Greenpeace, according to Google. And so anyone doing research on Google now, if you're looking up founders of Greenpeace, Patrick Moore's name isn't going to come up because Greenpeace has scrubbed their website. Google scrubbed the website. The only hope we have right now in terms of digital freedom is the Wayback Machine, the Internet search engine. I don't know how much longer they can last because I have a feeling they're going to be shut down. They can't keep doing what they're doing. They're making it hard for Google to whitewash history.
I agree. And if you go to Wikipedia, I love this, Mark. If you go to Wikipedia, you could see, I did the other day, took screenshots from 2018, where in the, I believe it's the history section of Wikipedia, one of the tabs, there's many tabs, more than just the one that pops up on your computer, and you can go back and compare from then to now the changes that they made. So they, guys, take screenshots of these things, this evidence down the road that these guys are messing with data.
Well, I use DuckDuckGo. .com to search it, and I put in Patrick Moore Greenpeace, and just the little blurb you can click on from the Greenpeace website says Patrick Moore did not found Greenpeace. He frequently
himself. He was one of the founding members, and that's the exact phrase from the Greenpeace screenshot. So, yeah, he wasn't the sole founder, but he was among the founding members of Greenpeace, recognized by Greenpeace for nearly three and a half decades before they started erasing their history because they didn't like the dissent of Patrick Moore from their message and narrative.
Well, there's even a New York Times article, and I think it was from the 1980s or 1990s or whatever. I can't remember. I might be way off that, but it's on my Facebook for those of you who are on my Facebook.
It was some decade previous to now.
Yeah, where he wrote an op-ed in the New York Times about Greenpeace as the co-founder, as one of the co-founders. So, this is about erasing history, isn't it? It's about rewriting history, as Michelle Obama had warned us that we must rewrite history.
Yes, and the key, even beyond this, I mean, this is what the tactics they're willing to go to, but this gives you an idea of the threat. And here's, let me just go back to this presidential commission again. This presidential commission on climate change, headed by Dr. Will Happer, could, from Princeton University, I think he said Yale, but he's Princeton University. He may have actually undergrad at Yale, I can't remember now, but he's from Princeton. This would be the first official United States government dissent on man-made climate change since the whole thing began. And the whole thing began, obviously, with our consent in 1988 with the UN IPCC formation, and then in earnest in 1992 with the Rio Earth Summit, which set up the framework for the whole UN climate summits that were annual. And it was just a travesty of George H.W. Bush administration, the first George Bush.
Yeah.
This is why they're so threatened. This is why Michael Mann, the climate activist scientist, went immediately and did a big high profile attack on Patrick Moore and Will Happer at Newsweek. And here's the interesting thing: and one of my favorite attacks on Will Happer is they say, "Oh, well, he isn't a climate scientist, therefore he has no business making any comments like this." And I had a lot of fun with this because not only is Will Happer have 200 peer-reviewed scientific studies, but he is actually one of the foremost experts on the greenhouse gas effect. And I actually quote another Harvard physicist who explains that Will Happer's research is actually the leading expert on the greenhouse effect. Something that Michael Mann is the guy who goes around and he'll say things like, and I have these in my report, my big report at Climate Depot on him. He'll say things like, if you want to know what's happening with global warming, look out your living room window. He says the most absolutely, not just scientifically moronic things, but just moronic things you can imagine. And we're going to have to relocate major cities. So he made that claim. And so we did all the documentation. And Michael Mann basically went silent. He didn't respond to this. This was heard far and wide. Associated Press, the same week as this all happening, came out and they claimed to have found definitive evidence of man-made global warming, and it was in the U.S. temperature records, how we have more, the last 20 years we have more record highs than lows, and therefore that's proof of the fingerprint of carbon dioxide. And then, of course, I interviewed about five or six climate scientists, including Dr. John Christie, the climatologist, used to be with NASA. And it turns out, had AP used a 100-year time scale, there was much hotter days back in the 1930s and previous times, and there's actually no trend that the AP was trying to show that they cherry-picked a time frame. So there's going to be a lot of more and more alarmist garbage coming up as this presidential commission forms. And apparently I'm hearing inside information for you guys, Aaron. I'm hearing that they've already picked the numbers. To pick the members, the scientists are set. We just don't know the timeline, and we don't know, you know, exactly when this is going to begin. And again, that's all subject to President Trump could get pressure inside Washington to kill it. But keep in mind, President Trump has had some great members. The best EPA administrator, of course, was Scott Pruitt, who has been just probably the most effective campaign. I think he was only in office like a year and a half. Probably the most effective cabinet member.
Michael Flynn lasted what, 2 weeks? I think he was assassinated quicker than anybody by these guys. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest,
sure.
Mark Morano, who is the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change. And you can find him at climatedepot.com.
Must get book.
Just the back is worth getting. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
On the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury.
They did a bad thing. Chris Isaac knew it first. Okay, so we still want to know, Mark, to support the commission, the president's commission, is there anything, I mean, people can always send letters and that kind of thing, but is there something, are you guys coordinating anything through like CFACT or through Climate Depot or any of that, that people could jump in on?
Yes, and one of the things we're doing, I was able to testify at the congressional hearing from the Congressional Western Caucus House Natural Resource Committee. Actually, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was scheduled to testify there. But there's a great coalition of congressmen in the House, a lot of them from the Western area, but some of them actually from the East Coast. And we're thinking that we're doing a massive talking points document, which we'll be releasing, you know, probably in the next 3 weeks. And then we're looking to hold some kind of congressional briefing on this. And here's the key we're trying to do is show, first of all, profile all the scientists who dissent. As you know from reading the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, it wasn't hard. I mean, I just reached out to these scientists, and they're all there with unbelievable credentials. One of my favorites, Dr. Robert Gegengag, University of Pennsylvania, you know, hundreds of peer-reviewed studies, been on almost every continent. And he's a, you know, from a very, what you would say, left-wing school, and he even loves Al Gore, but he couldn't believe it when he saw his film. And I profile the scientists, so I'm thinking of doing a talking points report that's going to not just profile the scientists, but on every issue from A to Z, very brief sort of paragraph responses with footnotes. And we want to get this information. One of the things we need to do that's the most important is to make people comfortable to challenge climate claims. Now, the problem is many political leaders And including, I include Trump administration officials in this. Well, first of all, he had some stinkers in there, like, you know, Rex Tillerson, and he had, he was probably the worst. And he's got, frankly, he's got Rick Perry. You may be here surprised to hear me say that, but actually on Climate Depot, been running stories, not by me, but by others, calling for the resignation of Rick Perry. Here's a guy who squandered 2 years at the Energy Department, essentially has done nothing. He's not been under attack. He's got no media. He's just sort of a placeholder there. The only thing he's had said is he's supported, he and Al Gore have the same goals and they're working together. He no longer challenges global warming. He's just trying to work with everyone. Kumbaya. It's really it's a travesty as people are trying to reverse some of these Energy Star restrictions. I've even met with his top levels of his staff, and they just seemed disinterested in doing anything. So he's had some stinkers. So Donald Trump's going to get nothing from official Washington. He's going to say, don't do it. This is what's happened since the beginning of the whole climate. Don't deal with it. Oh, it's not an issue. Just let it go. We don't want to be against science. It's a no-winning issue for you. But hopefully Trump will rise above that and make this happen. But one of the things we need to do is make politicians comfortable, Republican politicians comfortable to challenge the science. It's hard. And you have now a coalition led by Mitt Romney, some Republican House members, Lindsey Graham, and what was the other Republican senator? There's one who are essentially coming up with a new Green Deal light. They're going to accept most of the scientific premises of AOC and the Green New Deal, but they're going to come up with market-driven solutions, in quotes. Now, keep in mind, what's the biggest market-driven solution? That's been a carbon tax historically, and a bunch of liberal Republicans have been pushing that now for several years. So back to your question, what can people do? They need to speak out. They need to get their congressmen comfortable at town halls, everywhere else. We need to support this commission because it would give Trump administration cabinet members, the president himself, congressmen who want to oppose, give them scientific cover. That is why we need to do it. Of course, that's not a great sell. You don't want to announce that publicly because, you know, that's the effect it would have, though, is give them cover. But you need politicians to support this publicly. So anything we can do in the public to support it. Because to think that the United Nations and National Climate Assessment are speaking for the United States government, that is a joke from beginning to end. I've done so many reports on both. In fact, I have a whole chapter just on the UN and all the UN scientists who turned against it. And the National Climate Assessment, you know, these are based on government agencies that are more than, some of them 100% dependent on federal funding, and not just government agencies, but things like the National Academy of Sciences, NAS, and other groups. These groups who support these groups, they support these climate assessments, have to, because they're getting their money from the government, and they will do what the government dictates. And in this case, Trump administration had nothing to do with the report. It was commissioned with Obama holdovers, and they didn't want to be against science or seen as censorship. They knew it was a trap, so they let it go by, which I don't agree with, but I can understand why they did it. So they essentially, every department head, including EPA Energy, rubber-stamped that report. So that's got to be reversed. So I guess I don't have a great answer on how the public can do this other than to speak out and to urge their congressmen to speak out. We just have, it all comes down to Donald Trump at this point. President Trump has to pull the trigger on this, and hopefully he won't get distracted or listen to bad advice. He's got to make this happen, because without it, without a presidential commission, we are going into the next election. Now, if President Trump wins, great. We'll have 4 years of no new regulations, and we can probably officially pull out of Paris, but everything, the framework, everything's still there for the next president who wants to re-regulate everything and go beyond what President Obama did.
See, that's always the problem. We get a conservative administration in there, and then they roll back a bunch of regulation, but they haven't changed the laws. So I always think of them, it's like they got dehydrated. So the next guy comes in, you know, gets out the fire hose, waters them down, they're all back again.
Yeah, and let me get on my real soapbox here. If you go back since the 1910s, it's at least 1930s, every presidential administration, no matter what rhetoric they use, has usually left the country further left than when they began.
Yep.
And let's go through it. You have FDR, who obvious reasons. Harry Truman continued FDR's legacies. And then the real tragedy, and I know many conservatives love Dwight Eisenhower, he actually ended up funding and solidifying the Green New Deal and all these welfare programs. And he did nothing to stop it. So he was part of the big, you know, corporate estate. Then you have John F. Kennedy, who came in briefly, but then Lyndon Johnson came up with the Great Society. And then President Nixon funded the Great Society and solidified all that. And then you had Jerry Ford, you had Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan's first term, you could argue, was a retrenchment in the first term. But by his second term, it was, you know, he was essentially managing what he had done and it was just coasting. So by the end of his term, it was sort of a wash. He had already, all sorts of things had reversed. Reagan was arguing for gun control shortly after he left office.
And regionalism. He was doing that as governor of California, trying to regionalize California, which is part of a United Nations Agenda 21 goal.
The whole Bush, yes, and that was, you know, probably the biggest mistake Ronald Reagan made was picking George H.W. Bush as his running mate in 1980. Then you had George H.W. Bush, and you can't say enough about how bad he was for everything. I mean, everything from taxes, regulations, to the environmental policy, to the Rio Earth Summit, the Agenda 21,
New World
Order, for the everything. So then you go through the 8 years of Clinton, and actually you could argue that one of the most conservative periods next to Reagan's first term was Bill Clinton's second term, when he had a Republican House and Senate and a Democrat president, Bill Clinton. That partisanship sort of caused a great gridlock. We were all distracted with a sex scandal, Monica Lewinsky. That's a wonderful thing to happen in Washington. We had 75 cent a gallon gas here in Washington, D.C. We had balanced budgets. We had welfare reform. We had no real enemies. We had a, you know, pulling back. So it was actually a brief period there. And then, of course, George W. Bush comes in. He accepts the United Nations science. He rubber stamps it all. He sends his delegations every year to all these conferences. I get sick listening to the Bush administration. They're giving all the lip service to the nonsense UN claims and just playing the little game of China and India, so we won't sign on. But George W. Bush couldn't have been more forceful in endorsing this.
Plus, they ramped up the National Defense Authorization Act for anyone talking about what they call conspiracy theory, like talking about United Nations Agenda 21, sustainable development.
We will erase you.
We will erase you, right? Yeah. And you could be considered a domestic terrorist and that's in the NDAA after 9/11. So anyway, go ahead, Mark. Just like to put
Those then, of course,
tidbits.
You had 8 years of Obama, and then you had the Republicans campaigning on repeal Obamacare. Guess what? It never happened. At least not officially. They could never even get the votes for that. Maybe they didn't have enough votes. But either way, the
point is,
now you're going to have people camp. If the Green New Deal passes in 2020, if a Democrat wins, you're going to have Republicans in 22 repeal the Green New Deal, and they're going to run. They may even win on that, and then they're probably going to fall short again because of Lindsey Graham and Senator Romney. It's the cycle. But after all this cycle and all the fighting and all the back and forth, if you look at the big picture, we've continued to progress, central planning and drifting leftward. Other critiques of the Trump administration have been essentially that he just hasn't pulled the trigger enough. He could have pulled the United States out of the UN framework, which would have then potentially, and depending on how legal interpretations go, required a new treaty or a ratification of a treaty to get us back in, because it was all based on the original Rio Earth Summit Treaty in 1992, the whole UN framework, which led to the Kyoto Protocol and the Paris Agreement. So he didn't do that. Instead, he announced his intent. And Al Gore correctly points out at every speech he gives that President Trump has not pulled us out of Paris. It doesn't happen until after the next election in 2020 officially. And it could be easily reversed if that's the next president's wish. So that's the problem, is Republicans play this game, but they don't actually kill the beast or actually maim the beast. All they do is scare the beast away, and then it comes back and continues its march.
Nobody wants to be mean.
If for no other reason to vote for Trump, vote for Trump, because we do not want this Green New Deal. And I guarantee, if a Democrat wins, we are going to get the Green New Deal and then some forever and ever.
Well, I want to be clear, though. Donald Trump is the greatest thing to happen to freedom since Ronald Reagan. First of all, if you compare, I never understood a conservative never Trumper. There might be a couple out there. I understand the mainstream and the liberal Republicans, because they don't like someone.
Well, they get all
the system
jacked up about, oh, he's just not nice. Before we launch into this, hold on 5 seconds, and we'll do a really quick break here. We're going to come back with our guest, Mark Morano. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You change.
Dire Straits is the greatest. We just found out last night that Alabama did some kind of climate song. We didn't play it for you, Mark, but yeah, ruined another artist for us. Can't watch any movie stars, can't listen to any music.
Yeah.
It's just depressing. We're down to Ray Stevens and Dire Straits. That's all we got left. Weird Al. Weird Al seems to be holding out. He's still offending people. So, God love him. Okay, so go... let's kind of make this last chunk, since I think some people really don't understand what Donald Trump is doing. They're caught up in the media craziness of, you know, he's not nice. He said something mean. He uses Twitter. He uses Twitter.
If he'd just shut up.
Yeah. Tell people exactly what he has done for them that they might actually like.
Well, first of all, he's the right president for the right time. I mean... What the most important thing President Donald Trump has done is he doesn't give a bleep, bleep, bleep of what the mainstream Republican Party inside Washington or anyone like that thinks. He just doesn't care. He's the first president I'm aware of in the last 50 years, even more so than Ronald Reagan. Because Ronald Reagan, if you remember, it sounds great and it's a history thing, but I actually was a volunteer in 1980 on his campaign. My brother worked in his administration. And I very closely followed that. I followed that administration. He was co-opted so many times by people like George Shultz and Donald Reagan. Maybe Donald Reagan was one of the as bad ones, but he by the time end of his second term, he had been major wayward drifting. I remember conservative activists held a press conference and said Reagan, when he did the Reykjavik summit, you know, he went on the whole arms control thing, the nuclear-free world. I mean, I understand he was trying to bankrupt the Soviet Union, but signing that was all window dressing at the end. But anyway, what President Trump has done is he has beholden himself to the miners in West Virginia, to crowds in Kentucky, to Ohio crowds, to Michigan, to Wisconsin. These rallies he goes to, that's the only approval he seeks. And so for the first time in the modern era, we actually have a president who cares what the people who elected him want. And he just doesn't care what official Washington wants in any way, shape, or form. He's not subject to that kind of pressure. And that is why it is so refreshing. Even on climate, which, you know, I've done reports, Donald Trump is exactly right. You know, Donald Trump aces climate science on 60 Minutes interview. I mean, even just off the top of his head and rhetorically without even, like, studying the issue, he knows all the points. He quotes his uncle, who was a scientist, and he destroyed Leslie Stahl in that 60 Minutes interview. He's that good. He instinctively gets it. But beyond that, his insults are very important because, frankly, the way the media treats him, I mean, Bushes were eaten alive by the media. Bushes were eaten alive by the Michael Moores and the CNNs, and they accepted it. Donald Trump's not going to accept it. He pushes back. He insults. He hurls it. It's fantastic. It's exactly what's needed. You could say he's mean. He's a bully. Well, he's dealing an uphill struggle against one of the most insane, nasty, mean bullies we've ever had in the form of the mainstream media. So he's exactly what's needed as president now. Now, does he make mistakes? Does he do things that you could wish you could take back on Twitter? Yeah, all the time. But that's part and parcel with what is going on here. He's just overall so refreshing in our lifetimes, Debbie and Aaron. I don't think we're going to ever have a president that brings a smile to our face or that rallies us on core issues of freedom and deregulation than any other. There's just no way we're ever going to see a president like this again. And I include Mike Pence in that. Mike Pence, I don't know. If he would become president after Trump, he seems very muted, seeking a safe space. I just don't know how strong he's going to be to stand up. Because you have to be a successful president for freedom today, you have to stand up to the Republican Party. You had to stand up to the media. You had to stand up to official Washington. You had to stand up typically to many times to your own cabinet, to your own advisors. And that's what Donald Trump has been pretty much doing. I mean, the week he pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement, the advice he was getting from Rex Tillerson, stay in. The advice he was getting from Rick Perry, stay in. The advice he was getting from Bill O'Reilly on Fox News, stay in the Paris Agreement. Actually, Bill O'Reilly may have been gone by then, or I can't remember. I think he was still on Fox, but right before Bill O'Reilly was on there. My point is, even people who identify as kind of conservative were urging him to stay in, but Donald Trump knew that he could not go face a rally of 10,000 people in Michigan or Pennsylvania and not have pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement. So he pulled out of the UN Paris Agreement. We are not going to find that in any president probably for the rest of our lifetime. And that is what is so amazing about this guy. Relish every minute we have him.
But don't forget that we're not out of the Paris Agreement yet until the 2020, the day after the 2020 U.S. presidential
and even
election.
That, wow. The next president can put us right back in 2024. So that's why I wish Donald Trump had gone further. He needs, and maybe he will at some point, but they need to pull us out of the framework. We need to make null and void the Rio Earth Summit Treaty. There's so many things we could do to make this permanent.
Okay, so tell me this. So for people who don't follow these things, why is that so important? I mean, the discussion is largely circulated around it doesn't do anything anyway. So why should people care about that?
Well, we care about it for several reasons. Because, first of all, we accept the UN climate report. Then you get into judges. One of the reasons that we're in this mess where we had President Obama able to do what he did through executive order was because the Supreme Court had as its basis the United Nations climate science, the EPA science, which is based on the UN and National Climate Assessment. They look at this and they say, well, we should be able to regulate what humans exhale from our mouth, carbon dioxide, as a pollutant under the Clean Air Act. And so justices vote that way. So the reason it's so important is to just destroy both the scientific foundation of the UN reports and these UN climate reports is we have to get out of the whole process in order to reject it so that the law of the land, so to speak, will be that we don't accept that and that federal regulation statute judges will no longer have to follow and look at those for reasoning. And that's what I'm hoping a presidential pulling out of the UN and a presidential commission in tandem can actually hopefully achieve that. Now, the problem is the left is relentless. As you see with these lawsuits with kids on climate. I mean, some of the stuff is just insane. My favorite was the recent 60 Minutes, and I did a whole special on Climate Depot on this. A young teenage girl, maybe 12, 13, said that she put her ankle in global warming. And what does that mean? 60 Minutes thought, these kids aren't speaking gobbledygook. Yes, they are. She was talking about her house was flooded during heavy rain. She blamed the heavy rain on man-made global warming. And when she got out of bed that morning, her house had flooded, so she was up to her ankles in flood water. So she stepped in global warming before. She knows what it means to be a victim of global warming. 60 Minutes runs with this. Jeez. This is the nonsense they teach. And I have a whole chapter in my book on this, on just the indoctrination of kids. It works. Kids are just completely, and here's another thing. Parents used to worry, oh, I hate to send them off to a four-year liberal college. They'll come back liberals. They're going to be indoctrinated. Hey, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Kids 12, 13, 14 are being indoctrinated by social media now. And social media, as I've already mentioned, Google, YouTube now has the disclaimers on climate skeptics. Twitter has all kinds of accusations on manipulating, whether it's on abortion issue, on climate issue. Facebook, I had a video that has now over 10 million hits. I was the poster child that they used, saying, how could Facebook allow evil denier Mark Morano to have a Facebook video, 3-minute video of over 10 million views? They went after Mark Zuckerberg for allowing this, climate activist, the guy who authored the 97% climate consensus, actually went after Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook, and they started labeling him a climate denier. And this is how bad it's gotten. So 12, 13-year-olds, I had my daughter come home at age 14, Dad, did you see another black man was shot by a cop? I mean, she's getting all the alerts from social media, Instagram, all this stuff that's like, that Black Lives Matter. That's the news view they're getting, and it's done in a snappy, exciting way. They're not watching CBS Evening News, or they're not getting this from liberal college professors because they're not in college. So the uphill battle we have to fight is so great and steep, you can't lose hope. But, right now we have President Trump, and we have to relish every minute and make every minute count right now.
I always wonder if his tweets are kind of like chumming the water.
I do, too. It's like distraction.
Keeps all the sharks busy while they swim down below them. Because you look at it, it's kind of brilliant.
He distracts them so he can do
Yes, we can go do stuff.
It's amazing that people actually don't think when he said he was a stable genius, I believed it. And people thought, oh, what an idiot. He's this. He is probably one of the most intelligent, strategic presidents we've ever elected.
I agree. I think he's playing chess versus checkers. And most people out there are playing political checkers. And he's like.
But you watch it, it's like, squirrel. And they all run over there, and meanwhile, back at the farm, they're getting all this stuff done. But we have like a minute left. So in that, anything you want to promote?
Well, first of all, yes, a couple things. My book, Politically Incorrect Guide to Climate Change, will be coming out with a new edition probably in the next 6 weeks or within 2 months. It's going to have a special update with the Green New Deal. It'll include a whole extra bonus chapter on that. That's coming out. We have a sequel to the movie that'll be coming out in 2019, Climate Hustle. Climate Hustle 2, Rise of the Climate Heretic, although it's not actually called. It's Climate Hustle 2, or we'll have working titles. But we're doing a sequel that's going to be on specifically the United Nations climate agenda and the whole climate movement. So the biggest thing I want to leave you with is the Green New Deal, even if you accept the United Nations and Al Gore's climate claims, setting aside the science for a minute. Climatologist Pat Michaels ran the numbers using their own, the United Nations and EPA own numbers. You wouldn't even be able to tell a temperature difference 100 years from now. You wouldn't even be able to tell the emission difference 100 years from now if the United States fully implemented the most expensive domestic policy, the Green New Deal, in the history of our country. It wouldn't even have an impact. So the idea that you first want to look at cost-benefit analysis. This
we
is
got to run, Mark.
Trojan horse.
We're
for
hitting the news.
Ever.
You're awesome, Mark.
We love you, Mark Marano. Got to come back on
Thank
again.
You, Aaron.
You're
Thank you, Debbie.
Rock star.
Oh, yeah.